The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to ponder what would happen if the fix was in, legally, Tyler Palko. And in college basketball tonight, we believe we have a team that just might be controlled by demons.
Demons, I tell you, demons. And, you know, when you're doing a first take, and your voice goes away, that tells you you are watching live video from Las Vegas each and every day. And let's give Dave a chance to collect his breath and tell us what he saw last night, your first take on a Wednesday.
We got it back. It's just when we say Tyler Palko, we get all choked up.
Takes your breath away.
That take was meant to be what it was, by the way. Just two words. Here's a surprise. We talked about the UCLA situation a little bit this week. They actually filed to the NCAA to get an exemption to be eligible for a bowl, because after they lose to Oregon tomorrow, they're going to have a losing record. The NCAA passed it. Here's what surprises us. Why does UCLA want that? You just got beat 50-0. Tomorrow night, you're going to get pounded pretty badly on national television. And unless you make a coaching hire quickly, which we're not sure we're going to see happen, those weeks leading up to a bowl are almost going to be time where it's going to make your program look bad more than looking good. If you have not made a good hire, and a quick one, the announcer say, look at the trouble that UCLA's had. Rick Neuheisel's out. They've been clobbered in the last couple of games. Now, they've got an interim coach here. That's not exactly the best way to sell your program. Yeah, you're going to make a few bucks for going to a minor bowl, because that's all that's going to be available for them. But in the long run, was that the right move to make? Teddy, what do you bring with you from Thursday night?
Oh, we got to talk about Billy Walters, man. Again, Billy Walters. The most, yeah, I don't think there's any question, the most famous sports bettor in the world, a guy who was featured on 60 Minutes this past year as being the most successful sports bettor in Las Vegas history. And there's certainly a couple of guys who you might want to put on that list along with BW, but he's been at the top of the sports betting world for what, the better part of the last 25 years? Well, it looks like the feds didn't like his 60 Minutes piece. It looks like the feds don't like successful sports bettors. Billy Walters under indictment. From the federal government came down, or the reports came down this morning, and it looks like they're going to throw the book at him, which is no surprise. Walters has beaten not one, not two, but three previous federal indictments. We can call him, as being having success with his legal crew against the federal legal crew in years past. But once again, it's a situation where a sports bettor trying to make a relatively honest living under attack from the powers that be. Very disappointing to see this happen to BW, even though, you know, the bottom line is, when you do this, you kind of got to keep your head low. Dave, neither you or I have done a particularly good job at keeping our heads low. We're doing a live podcast every day. But the bottom line is, when you get to Billy Walters' level, you're going to face issues, and he's facing a big one this morning.
Yeah, let's clear one thing up. He's not under indictment. One of the runners in the organization,
yes.
Now, it may tie back to him. But he's not under indictment yet. What we found interesting, and of course we joked about this off the air, as part of the 60 Minutes show, and even if you saw the local news or see the media reports of this indictment, they said, you know, Walters is 4-0 against the federal government. But the way you track your numbers, you might want to say 3-0-1. There's a little bit more to that, perhaps, than meets the eye. We got him at 3-0-1. They might list him at 4-0 somewhere else. It just depends on the number of game time.
So what do you make the number here? BW serving jail time. What do you make the number?
It could be nothing, because again, he's not under indictment. It's just simply one of the runners in the organization, unless the runner is willing to give up a lot, which it does. First things we're hearing, it doesn't appear that way. It's going to be hard to trace it back up because the buck could literally stop right there. Remember, what they got the runner for is relatively mild.
Sure.
Literally betting too much money without acknowledging exactly where it came from. That's mild. We're talking about under six figures in this transaction. Going to get you a little slap on the wrist. They can't threaten the runner with enough to take it further up the line.
So give me a number here. BW doing jail time for this. You say the no is minus 1,000?
Oh, it'd have to, because he's not really in this.
Yet.
There are so many layers between those couple of bets at the Golden Nugget to get all the way back through. You wouldn't even set a price. Yeah. Sportsbook would not take action on
exactly.
this. But there could be other things happening. The problem is when you go on national television and you sort of flaunt things a little bit, you set yourself up as a target. And I think he knew that you could become a target.
And you know, I've been on national TV in years past. Try not to flaunt what I do, but the bottom line is that these are concerns, and we have to be concerned about them. And certainly we have to report about it here on Vegas Sports Day. Let's shift our focus now into Market Watch, because we have a very intriguing scenario coming about in this Conference USA Championship game, where the Houston Cougars, who've been undefeated all year long, they've been a point spread juggernaut, they've been an over machine, although their defense has gotten better in recent weeks. But Houston, double-digit favorites over Southern Miss in the CUSA championship game on Saturday. And this is one game, Dave, where perhaps the underdog has a real financial incentive to lose, not win.
Here's the problem. And we don't want to get all the conspiracy theorists out there going on this, but we'll tell you exactly what the situation is. If Houston wins, they go to a BCS Bowl. That is locked in. Most likely the Sugar Bowl. Sugar Bowl payout, we can't see for sure what it's going to be yet, but it's going to be about the $18 million range. Could be a little more, could be a little bit less. That goes, of course, to Houston and to Conference USA. Houston gets the biggest chunk out of Conference USA, but it goes to all of the member teams in there. Southern Miss, by losing, could make over $1 million out of that bowl duty. That's a lot for a program like that. If you win the game, that's great. You're the conference champions. You're on the Shreveport or Memphis or somewhere for your bowl. That's it. You are not going to climb that same ladder that Houston would. So if you're Southern Miss, mixed motions coming in. But here's where it can get even more convoluted. If you're Conference USA, you assign the officials to the game. And how awkward is this? Houston's up 7 late in the game. Southern Miss has the ball at midfield. They throw a Hail Mary pass near the goal line. Looks like pass interference. And an official has to make a call that could cost the conference and its member institutions $18 million. That is an awkward, awkward pressure. That's why some people talk about the lack of a playoff system and whether the BCS is good or bad. Some of the things we don't mind, this is what we don't mind. The financial situation got stretched out very awkwardly. But just imagine if you're that official being paid by the conference and you have to make that call.
Yeah, and, you know, we're getting some great quote here from Southern Miss head coach Larry Fedora talking about the situation and talking about the prospect of his team costing the league, you know, $18 million. A huge, as you mentioned, Dave, financial windfall for these programs that don't tend to earn these type of dollars. And his quote is, I don't know what to say, glancing down at the podium. That's a tough one. Just, I'm sorry. That's the only thing I can say. Fedora ducking the question entirely, which is, you know, it speaks volumes about potentially, and not that Southern Miss is going to go into this game saying we can't win, we don't want to win, it's better for us if we lose, but, you know, there are mitigating factors in this ballgame that are going to make me a little bit reluctant to put my money on the Golden Eagles, even at an attractive plus price.
My money will be there. It's not yet because the markets are betting Houston. No surprise. We saw as high as 15 before we came on the air today. We'll talk about this game in Money Time a little bit more tomorrow because Southern Miss can actually match up and can play well. And regardless of what the university's motivation might be or the conference's motivation, when these kids take the field, see, they want to win the game.
Yep.
That $1.5 million, if you go to the university president, what's better for you, win this conference championship or lose the game, still get a bowl bid, and pick up over $1 million, There's no question what's better for the university. But if you're a Southern Miss junior or senior, that money doesn't mean a damn thing for you. You go out and win the game. You want to get what you can for yourself. And in fact, you're extra motivated to knock Houston out of this position. So yeah, our money's going to go to Southern Miss, but we're in no hurry. Let's let the conspiracy theorists bet it a little higher first.
Yeah, let's drive this damn line up, Dave. Let's do it. But look, this is your show.
It's your damn show.
It's your damn show, exactly. It's your best damn show. It's the best damn show you're watching all day. And we value your input. Those emails, we like to answer them every day on air. We didn't have time today. Tomorrow's show, we're going to do a full email segment. Send those questions in, sportsday@covers.com. You can ask us questions in the posting forum as well, covers.com. Just click on the forum link in the community section. Become a part of the community. We're going to answer emails. We're going to answer forum questions tomorrow. So get those questions in. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. Coming up next, we're going to put 300 minutes of Michigan, Wisconsin under the microscope. It's postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
To scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game, show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
The betting markets are clearly expecting fireworks from the Wisconsin Badgers this weekend, hence the picture, and hence the fact that Wisconsin is a 9.5-point favorite in the inaugural Big Ten championship game. Now, the line makes sense in some regards. You know, it's based largely on this year's power ratings and, of course, the current form of these two teams. And Wisconsin's power rating number has gone through the roof, really. They were a monster team last year. They were a monster team for most of this season. And, again, we're talking about a squad that averaged close to 45 points per game. They had more than 2,700 passing yards and more than 2,900 rushing yards this season, balanced on offense, 55% third down conversions. And they were a full two touchdowns better on the offensive side of the football than Michigan State this year when we look at the full season-long averages between these two teams. So you can understand why the spread is where it is. That being said, we've mentioned the concept of Senior Bowl here on the show many times before, and we'll continue to do this in the future. When we talk about the Senior Bowl concept, we're talking about all the previous meetings between these two teams where the senior's been on the squad. So that means each of the last 4 years, sometimes we do 5 years, but this is a four-year breakdown of the Michigan State-Wisconsin matchup, which tells us where these two programs have been and where they're likely to be come Saturday. October 19th, the first week of doing the Vegas Sports Day show on a daily basis, we did a Senior Bowl that broke down Wisconsin-Michigan State, and when we see the line this week, you know, it's time to revisit that concept.
You simply have to. Again, we could talk about the overall perceptions this year. We talk about the overall numbers. But when you look at what these teams have done head-to-head, they're trying to tell you that Wisconsin is significantly better than Michigan State. Well, if they are, it's supposed to show up somewhere on the field. So if we take the career arc of all of the fifth-year seniors, which also happens to be the career arc of Mark D'Antonio as the coach at Michigan State, there's something really interesting in these numbers, and it puts that line Saturday night into perspective. Five games head-to-head now. 300 minutes of football on the field. Michigan State wins three of the five games. Total score over those five games, 160 to 154 for Michigan State. Total offense, 2,170 yards to 2,096 for Michigan State. Okay, guys, those are a lot of plays. That's a lot of head-to-head. That's a lot of opportunity for Wisconsin at any time to show that they're the superior program. They're not. They haven't been. These games were all even. None of them decided. Wisconsin's biggest win was 8 points. So they have not won a single game by more than the spread. But it's not just Wisconsin. It's the whole Big Ten. We've now had 5 full years of Mark D'Antoni as the coach. That's 40 conference games. How many of those 40 games have they lost by more than 9.5 points? Only 5. So if you were offered Michigan State plus this spread in every game he's coached, you're 35-5. This is not an easy team to beat in double figures. Wisconsin certainly knows that. They've never been able to do it. We'll break this game down a little bit more in Money Time tomorrow, but it just lets you know that 9.5 is based on perceptions that might not reflect the true realities of this matchup. Von Miller didn't practice for the Denver Broncos yesterday. Didn't even suit up for practice. He had surgery to repair some ligaments in his thumb on Tuesday, an injury that ordinarily keeps you out for about a week. And ordinarily that means, little insider six-pack note, maybe something we talk about in Money Time later in the week. But you know what? Von Miller is worthy of a postmortem. But you wouldn't know that if you've been following the Broncos, because all the attention seems to be focused on a left-handed quarterback and the little things that he's done at the end of games to make Denver have the streak they're having, one that might even get them into the playoffs. But Tim Tebow is not the number one reason why they're in this playoff chase. That's John Fox, the coach. And Tim Tebow might not even be the number two reason why they're in a playoff hunt. That may well be Von Miller.
Yeah, let's talk some Denver defense right now, because the transformation in the first year under John Fox has really been remarkable. Last year, 2010, the Broncos defense allowed 398 yards per game. That was dead last, number 32 out of 32 NFL teams. This year, 355 yards per game, significantly better. 2010, yards per pass allowed, 7.8 yards per pass. 2011, that's down to 7.4, nearly half a yard per pass attempt, shaved from the Broncos' averages. 2010, yards per rush, 4.7 yards per carry. This year, 4.1 yards per carry. Again, the rush defense significantly improved from where it was. The sack percentage on dropbacks last year, 4.4%. This year, 7.4%. Now, certainly we're going to give John Fox and his staff credit for the defensive transformation in Denver, and particularly when we look at how bad this team was defensively early in the season. You remember that first Monday Night Football game when the Raiders just ran the ball down their throats? You remember that trip to Green Bay where they got absolutely lit up by the Packers passing game? They had a couple of really ugly efforts early in the season. Since Tim Tebow came over, however, or took over the starting role, they've held 4 of their last 6 opponents to 15 points or less. So it's a defense that's gotten better and better as the season has progressed. Now, how much of this do we give Von Miller credit for? A lot. The bottom line, you know, the all-time rookie sack record, 14 and a half sacks by Derek Thomas of the Kansas City Chiefs. Here we are. There's still a month to play in the NFL regular season. Von Miller's got 10 and a half sacks. He's in position to tie or break that record with a strong December. All-time record for sacks by a rookie. Miller in contention for that. Miller's has required double teams. That's opened things up on the other side for Elvis Dumervil, who has 5.5 sacks this season. A Broncos team that had no pass rush at all in 2010, they got a pass rush this year. Miller certainly a factor. And Miller, without a doubt, I mean, you could say that maybe they missed a field goal anyway. But the bottom line, Miller made a play this past weekend at San Diego that, you know, a 4-yard stuff behind the line of scrimmage forced a long field goal attempt into an even longer field goal attempt. You could say he was the guy that won the game. Tim Tebow's going to get the credit. Von Miller's the guy who's been getting the job done. Unfortunately for Denver supporters, don't know yet if Miller is going to play this weekend. We'll discuss that more later in the show.
When we come back, time for the Insider Six Pack. We'll tell you about some other players who might not be playing in the NFL this weekend. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's pop the top on today's Insider Six-Pack. We're going to start in the hardwoods with the Ole Miss Rebels tonight. And a couple of real concerns here. They're taking the first true road game of the season for Ole Miss. They played a couple of neutral site games down in the Virgin Islands. Other than that, they played nowhere but Oxford, Mississippi. So first true road game for Ole Miss. That's factor number one. Factor number two, well, they're missing key cogs. Really, a little bit of a precarious position for their rotation tonight. Let's start Reginald Buckner, preseason All-SEC big man. He's not going to play tonight. He's out with a knee injury, and that leaves a big gap in that Ole Miss front court. Now, tonight, facing a DePaul team that has pressed extremely effectively so far this season, well, guess what? The point guard rotation for Ole Miss is a real problem. They're without Jalon Kendrick. They're without Ladarius White, two guys that will not be eligible until mid-December. And that leaves the true frosh, Jarvis Summers, as the only legitimate point guard on the roster this evening. Summers will be making his first career road start against a team that presses very effectively.
We're going to be talking about South Florida and West Virginia in a few minutes and what our rooting interests are going to be. But Cincinnati Bearcats might have a bigger rooting interest than our own pockets in that game tonight. If South Florida wins, Cincinnati will take the field on Saturday looking to clinch a BCS bowl spot. But they're going to do it with a two-headed quarterback combination. We talked about Munchie Legault replacing Zach Caleros on this show a couple of weeks ago. Had an awful game against Rutgers, so they decided that they would try two guys this past week. Legault and also Jordan Llewellyn. Llewellyn, a terrific runner, 8 carries for 77 yards in that 30-13 win over Syracuse. Look to see both of them again this week, which makes it difficult for a defense to prepare. We'll take this from Butch Jones talking about Llewellyn. He brings so much to our football team. I think you'll see his role become even that much more. He came in and gave us a spark.
We're probably not going to know until Sunday morning who is going to be the starting quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Josh Freeman suffered an injured shoulder versus the Bucs. On their last offensive snap, a failed quarterback sneak where we saw Freeman come up short in that regard. He only handed the ball off on running plays in yesterday's practice. Josh Johnson did all of the throwing in that ballgame. And here's how Raheem Morris, Tampa's head coach, is calling the situations. Quote, "It's one of those that will get all the way up to Saturday, potentially even Sunday. He's," meaning Josh Freeman, "is one of those guys who's going to get all the mental reps, the mental capacity, all that type of thing. And if he can throw it, then he can throw it. If he can't, then he can't." I'm not sure how much the betting marketplace is going to recognize the difference between these two. Freeman has had a very disappointing season compared to where he was last year. But Josh Johnson, even at this stage, he's been in the organization now 3 or 4 years for Tampa Bay, and he's still a much better runner than he is downfield thrower. The Bucs fall behind, and Johnson's at QB. They may struggle to come back.
Here's one we didn't expect earlier in the week. Tyler Palko, still the starting quarterback in Kansas City. We're not sure why. We're not sure why the markets have reacted the way they did. The first two games have been good unders for our pockets. Palko, not an NFL talent. And it's not that we're being harsh on him. It's just the reality. You've only got maybe 25 or 26 guys in the world good enough to be starting NFL quarterbacks, which, of course, kind of sucks for a 32-team league, as we see this year. Palko, in his first two starts, no touchdowns, 6 interceptions. We thought it would be all Kyle Orton this week. They don't want to make that full commitment yet. So now here becomes the problem. This late in the year, when you're having to split snaps at practice, it gets even harder for either Palko to develop or for Orton to assimilate into this offense. We'll take this quote directly from Todd Haley, lamenting that fact. "There's just not enough to go around. It's a big challenge for us. It's a great challenge to integrate any player into your system, let alone a quarterback, and in a short amount of time. We will see Orton on Sunday at some point," which leads us to believe that if we're going to try a third straight Kansas City under, it may be a first half ticket instead of a full game.
I would have sworn I just heard my conservatively, you're just a conservative guy, Dave, my conservative colleague, saying sucks and damn in the same show. This is one that has to be archived forever. You got my bad mustache earlier in the week. Now we have Malinsky with two minor swears in the same show. Hey, makes it must-see TV on a daily basis. Let's talk about the Denver Broncos. We talked about Von Miller's injury a little bit earlier. And it's not just the Von Miller injury that we're talking about right now. Running back Willis McGahee has looked like his old self in recent weeks. Really, he's been huge for Denver during this current winning stretch. 775 yards for McGahee, 4.8 yards per carry for the full season, and better numbers than that over the course of the last month. But McGahee has missed practice in each of the past 2 days. The team's been a little bit reticent about it, giving information. He's missed a practice. The official reason is called illness, whatever that means. Meanwhile, wide receiver Eddie Royal was injured returning a kickoff this past Sunday at San Diego. He's been in a walking boot ever since. Without Royal in the lineup, we're talking about little-known and little-used Matt Willis as the Broncos' starting wide receiver this week. He's on top of the depth chart for their game against Minnesota on Sunday.
Surprising to see the activity in Jacksonville yesterday. Usually when an interim coach comes in this late in the season, you sort of just play out the strings. Mel Tucker was busy. First, a couple of coaching changes. Johnny Cox, the wide receiver coach, fired. Replacing him, quarterback coach Mike Shepard shifts over to take the receivers. New quarterback coach, it's offense coordinator Dirk Koetter, who worked directly with Blaine Gabbert the rest of the way. Also roster moves. Wide receiver Jason Hill, he was cut. Taking his roster spot, they elevated Dewan Harris, a running back, off of the practice squad. And in the secondary, safety Courtney Green goes on injured reserve. He'll be replaced by cornerback Morgan Trent, who just got signed. Note that part of the reason why Jack Del Rio is not around to be doing this himself, Green is the 18th Jacksonville player to go on injured reserve this year. That's number one in the entire NFL.
When we come back, we've got game previews galore. We're going to talk about Kentucky St. John's. We're going to talk about Alabama Georgetown. We're going to talk about West Virginia, South Florida, and more. It's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Our highly paid media consultants are suggesting that I tone it down. Therefore, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all of the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky tonight, and boy, at first glance, this number was a head-scratcher for me, Dave. Kentucky minus 21.5 against St. John's. I know the Red Storm, not the team that they were last year, but 21.5? That number seemed high to you as well?
Kentucky's going to be a very awkward team to handicap, and we're going to be fascinated to watch what John Calipari does tonight. They've got six players. Okay, yeah, they're all NBA players. Five of them, four probably lottery picks, maybe even five, maybe five first-round draft choices. That upper-level talent is very, very good, but that's what they have. Even look at that last game against Portland State, a game they controlled wire to wire. Only seven players played more than 3 minutes. So you've got six, maybe a seventh, but then not much at all behind them. So here's the conundrum tonight. Yeah, this is kind of a big game. It's St. John's. It's on national television. But take a look at Sunday, Saturday. Not only a big showdown game, but an early start, a game that'll start at noon, local time, they're playing North Carolina. Possibly two of the three best teams in the country, along with Ohio State at this juncture. So if you're Calipari and you're thinking, okay, let's just grind, let's just get through this one, let's save energy for Saturday, are you willing to go deeper into your bench, which would make that 21.5 a little more attractive? Or is it just going to be that six-man rotation, in which case they're tough to fade because those six are pretty darn good, especially on the defensive end?
Now, for the Johnnies, Steve Lavin will not be accompanying the team down to Lexington tonight. Lavin is continuing to go through treatment for prostate cancer. He's feeling better but not healthy enough to travel with the team, and that means Mike Dunlap is going to be the Johns' head coach on the bench this evening. And St. John's, I mean, I guess from a points rate perspective, they've been a little bit disappointing so far this season. We saw them favored at Madison Square Garden against Arizona. That was a game that they lost. We saw them struggle to knock off Lehigh in early season play. And in their last contest against Northeastern, blown out at home, a game that they were favored by 9.5, ended up losing by 14. So the markets seem to have soured on St. John's a little bit right now, but this is still a roster that has talent and has potential NBA talent on it. However, that talent, very, very young.
Let's go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, in part two of the new Big East SEC Challenge. We've got Alabama -7.5 over Georgetown. And boy, the first thing that comes to mind when we see this challenge set up, and especially this type of matchup, give us a Big East road underdog against an SEC team. These Big East teams have played such difficult competition that they're not going to be bothered that much by hostile environments. So can we trust Georgetown here? When you look on paper, you're going to see a very young team. A couple of sophomores in the starting lineup, and nothing but freshmen on the bench. No one with any experience at all. But as we've alluded to earlier on this show, the Georgetown experience level goes a little bit beyond what they've actually done in regular season games. They had an August trip to China that was a good chance for the team to learn to play together. And then that trip out to Maui last week, where they take Kansas to the final possessions and beat Memphis in overtime. Yeah, this team looks young on paper, but they've had some challenges. Boy, there is a temptation to take a look at a Big East team against an SEC in this price range.
Yeah, but when you talk about pace here, Alabama is a team that wants to get out and push the pace. They want to get out and run. And we think of Georgetown as a very structured offensive team, a team that's going to slow it down against anyone. This Hoya squad has been willing to run a little bit. So maybe we see a higher octane game than many would expect. I don't know if that works well for the Hoyas in that regard. The other concern here, particularly in this point spread range, we're going to see this a lot in college basketball. We get into that 6, 7, 8 point range. The favorite likely to be ahead in the final minute in these contests, when you look at it mathematically, they're supposed to be ahead in these games. And in order to cover the number, they have to do two things. They have to make free throws, and they have to defend the three-point line. And so far this year, the Crimson Tide, they've been real good at doing both of those things, shutting teams down from beyond the arc and connecting from the charity stripe nearly 75% of the time, 74% and change. Those are two good indicators that perhaps, even if it's a tight game, maybe Alabama can find a way to cover it in those final 60 seconds. As we know, so many games in college basketball will come down to that free throw slash made or missed three-pointers, and it's good to look at the stats that matter for those particular type of ball games.
Let's switch to football now. Let's go down to Tampa, where when we went on the air, West Virginia still a 2.5-point favorite over South Florida, starting to drift to 3. We went with the 2.5 because the janitor in the hall was still there, and his numbers are usually pretty up-to-date. Obviously, big game for the Mountaineers. Win equals BCS. Doesn't matter what else happens. Yeah, you will see that they're tied. If Cincinnati wins Saturday, if they win, they establish that spot, because if there's a three-way tie, Cincinnati, Louisville, and West Virginia emerges from that. They see Cincinnati as a big favorite Saturday, so you got to believe win and you're in. Means a nice enthusiasm level, means a little spark for a team that's been disappointing up to this stage. And sometimes it's these A-minus type teams, when they've had a disappointing season, that relish the chance to get a second life.
South Florida hasn't had a disappointing season. They've had a disastrous season. Remember, this is a South Florida team. On opening day, they went to Notre Dame and won straight up, 23-20. Now, admittedly, they got outgained by 250 yards and were +5 in turnovers, including a 99-yard fumble return touchdown that set the toll for the whole contest. But the bottom line is they went to South Bend and won as double-digit dogs in that contest. Following that win, South Florida reeled off 3 consecutive big blowout wins. They were 4-0 at the end of September. Well, here we are. It's December. They're 5-6. So we're talking about a 1-6 run over the course of the last 7 weeks. The only win came at Syracuse, a Syracuse team that has fallen into last place in the Big East Conference. So it's been a really ugly run over the course of the last 2 months for South Florida. We talked about some of the locker room issues for the Bulls earlier in the week. We also need to talk about some of the injury concerns for this South Florida team. We're talking about, obviously, the starting quarterback, B.J. Daniels, who's not going to play tonight. And the backup, Bobby Evald, he's okay. He's certainly not the better of the two QBs. Doesn't have the same run-pass acumen that Daniels brings to the table. But, you know, Evald's okay. It's not a huge power rating differential between those two players. But in the secondary, Dave, we're talking about a South Florida team that's really banged up.
Particularly matters when you've got a short practice week. They had two starters that were out of the Louisville game at the end of the game who will recover enough to be able to play tonight, but not at practice every day. Several other kids playing dinged up that they gave some practice time off. So when you've got a short week, and remember, this is the first go-round for the South Florida coaching staff against the Dana Holgorsen offense. That's an offense that has seven games this year of 338 passing yards or more, four games of over 400, including over 400 against LSU, which can play a little bit of pass defense. So if it's the first time you've had to go up against this, you've got a short week, most of your guys in the secondary aren't 100%, you could be pretty sloppy out there. Does it sound like we're leaning to West Virginia here? Yes, we are. Mountaineers at under a field goal. When you're not asking them to do all that much, make a couple of plays, win the game with the right focus, I think they've got a pretty good energy level, Teddy, against a team that just might not be able to match that energy.
Sure, and with a BCS bowl bid on the line, we've seen West Virginia come up short in this role several times over the course of the last few years. We saw it happen in the Rich Rodriguez era, and we saw it happen post-Rich Rodriguez. That's why Bill Stewart, no longer the West Virginia head coach. Now Dana Holgorsen has his opportunity to put his stamp on the program and get West Virginia to a Big East title and a BCS bowl game in his first year on the job. I think he's capable of doing that. When we come back, money time shifts to the NFL. We're going to break down the Seahawks and Eagles tonight's NFL Network Showdown.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
It's Money Time, NFL edition, and tonight we have the Philadelphia Eagles. Yes, the 4-7 Philadelphia Eagles. Oh, they're road favorites. You're playing a team that is worse than they are. They're at Seattle this evening. Total in that ball game, 43. Eagles, Seahawks, compelling, must-see TV. Matchup of two 4-7 teams. What do we do with this one, Dave?
Part of the problem, of course, that the NFL Network has is they're not going to get the best of them. I mean, they stumbled into a great one last week on Thursday night with the Ravens and 49ers. But you're not going to get the best of it because the other networks spend more money on these games. They've got a better access in terms of trading out to get the prime matchups. Looked better at the start of the year when Philadelphia was expected to be so much better than they've been. And again, we keep going back to the fact that the Eagles are not a 4-7 team in terms of talent. And they haven't been a 4-7 team on the field. Again, we go to those bottom line numbers. They're still plus 41 first downs and plus 830 yards over their opponents. It's hard to be plus 41 and plus 830 and get a 4-7. If you just took those two numbers and nothing else, you're thinking 8-3, maybe even 9-2. So the Eagles have not had the best of the bounces, but now it's a different Eagle team. Injuries have set in. You won't see Michael Vick tonight. You won't see Jeremy Maclin. You won't see Dominic Rogers-Cromartie. And we're just not sure how much attitude, you know, they're going to bring. But as we alluded to earlier in the week on one of the emails that we answered, could it actually be better for them to be all the way in the Pacific Northwest with no pressure whatsoever on instead of being at home where all that negative media attention focused on them?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could. I mean, we talk about what Philadelphia did against the Giants a couple of weeks ago. And again, when you're playing away from the hostile environment, in this case, the hostile environment for Philadelphia is at home, it can help. Now, Seattle does have a strong home field edge. They do have enormous crowd support and a legitimate 12th-man factor for that Seahawks team. Remember a game earlier in the year, was it against Chicago that the Bears had all those first starts? No, that was when the Bears played the Lions. There have been multiple games this year where Seattle has been able to get teams to make mistakes simply because of the crowd noise and the effect of the crowd in that environment. Of course, with Philadelphia going with a relatively inexperienced starter in their offense in Vince Young, that is certainly a concern. But again, you brought up those numbers, plus 41 first downs, plus 830 yards for Philadelphia. Look at the Seahawks side of the equation. Minus 39 first downs, minus 511 yards. You look at the numbers alone, you put this game in a neutral field, Philly could be favored by doubles. But that, of course, would be considering that the Eagles team still has something to play for. Don't like the attitude in Philadelphia of late. Don't like the lingering issues with DeSean Jackson. And certainly some positive signs, at least defensively, for Arizona in this ballgame. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
Well, they get one big one. They get Alan Branch back. Now, if you saw the Seahawks against the Redskins Sunday, you saw them allow Roy Helu to rush for over 100 yards. It was a weak performance by what had been previously a good rushing defense. Branch didn't play. That really matters to them up front. He's one of these little glue players.
Michigan man. Woo! Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I never should have brought Alan Branch's name up. But again, we're trying to give you good information. We just have to be careful about the way that we do it. But here's what's fascinating about Philadelphia. We'll say, well, they're dead. They're out of it. These guys are playing for their contracts. They're playing for money. Vince Young, playing for a job. Not in Philly, but with somebody next year. And what was fascinating about that scoreboard result against New England, easy game to write off. Terrible scoreboard result. 466 yards of total offense at 7 yards per snap. The Eagles moved the ball up and down the field. Young made mistakes, but he also made plays. So while you might say, well, they've got nothing to play for, Young's got plenty to play for. And then maybe the most interesting guy to watch tonight, DeSean Jackson, who's taken an awful media beating the last couple of days for short-arming it in the red zone. They pointed out the fact that, you know what? He's had one catch in the red zone all season. That was all the way back on week one. If Jackson comes out with a chip on his shoulder, you're going to see Young come out and play with a lot to prove. You just might see the Eagles be loose, relaxed, and play a good football game tonight.
And that would certainly go a long way towards winning the game. Because when we talk about Seattle, still big injury concerns at the quarterback position. Tavares Jackson, when healthy this year, has been, we're not going to call him good, but certainly he's been effective within the confines of that Seahawks offense. And certainly much better once he got Sidney Rice healthy and in the lineup. But Jackson's not healthy. He's got a bad pectoral muscle. He really was in pain, obvious pain, on the field last week in the loss to Washington. Couldn't rally the team in the fourth quarter from behind, just couldn't make the throws. Is there a chance we might see Charlie Whitehurst come in and replace him at some point this evening? Maybe. The problem, of course, is that Charlie Whitehurst, he's been god-awful. Jackson has clearly been the better choice. I mean, you're saying that Tavares Jackson is clearly the better choice? Speaks a lot about the backup.
So we've got so many issues in this game, our pockets are not going to be heavily involved. But here's where they will be. It's play of the daytime. And we're going to go back to the college hardwoods. In our Insider Six-Pack, we told you about the issues that Mississippi has, especially a freshman point guard without a lot of depth. We like things Oliver Purnell did with DePaul last year. You couldn't tell the progress they were making because the Big East was simply so good. But they're going to extend their defense and they're going to press the full 40 minutes. They got some confidence after a good tournament last weekend, which they got outright wins over Texas Tech and Arizona State. Let's look to the DePaul Blue Demons, an under-the-radar team, to defensively press a Mississippi team with an awful turnover-to-assist ratio, 96-65, a team shooting less than 40% from the field against weak competition. Look for Ole Miss to struggle tonight against that DePaul defense. Make the DePaul Blue Demons our Sports Day play of the day.
And that's going to wrap it up for the Thursday edition. Thank you again for watching and taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll do it again tomorrow.